For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Oklahoma Perspective. Tulsa is working its way out of quarantine. The last 2 months have been difficult for everyone. KRMG's Russell Mills talks with Tulsa Mayor G.T. Bynum about the timeline from the first coronavirus death to today.
When you have your staff and you're all looking at each other on Zoom, I mean, how do you keep morale going? Because it just seems like it's overwhelming.
Well, I would say in the first couple weeks, the thing I kept telling my wife is this is like living through a nightmare that you just don't wake up from. Mm-hmm. It was so dystopian. If you'd told me 4 months ago that we're going to have to close every restaurant and bar in the community and not allow groups of more than 10 people to gather, and that we'd be telling everyone that they really ought to be wearing masks if they ever went in public, and then I go into downtown Tulsa and go to my office on a weekday, and it would be a ghost town because everyone would either be working from home or sheltering in place. Like, that's the kind of stuff that you see in science fiction movies. And we've just gone through that in Tulsa over the last 2 months. And what I think has been really, impressive from my vantage point, and certainly I see this in the universe of people that I work with day to day, is there was that period of time that we went through where it was like, I just can't believe this is happening. I can't believe these are the decisions we're having to make. This, again, this feels like we're living through a nightmare. And then people just accepted that, you know what, this is the reality. And kind of going back on that old Stoic philosophy of you can only control the things you can control. And so focus on those and let the rest of it just occur as it's going to occur and not worry about the stuff you can't control. And that's what we've tried to do at the city. And once we got over the, we can't believe that this is the way it's going, it's really been much more a series of practical problem solving. I've been really pleased with the way folks have handled it and held up. And I do think that your question about morale, I think one of the things that's really helped with morale has been the way the community's pulled together. There are people that can't handle the stress and react in a really negative way. And that is unquestionably elevated out there, but far more. It isn't even a close call. So many more people have reached out in a positive way and reaffirmed to me and to our team and to our first responders and our folks that are working on at the city and on the front lines how much they appreciate the work that's being done. And I save every single one of those emails, every single one of those letters, because it means a lot that people would think to reach out and give encouragement in such a challenging time. But again, I'm thankful I'm the mayor of a town where people do that and think to do that rather than not.
I'm sitting here thinking about the famous five stages of grief. Very early on, a mental health expert, and this was all the way back in mid-March, said people are in mourning. They don't know it, but they're experiencing grief. And so, I think some people get stuck in stages one and two, which are denial and anger. And then there's the bargaining. Well, we could open some of the businesses, or I'll wear a mask part of the time, depression for some folks has been a real issue. And then there's finally acceptance. And, I think some people have it eventually gotten to where I think, if I understand what you're saying, where you guys are, which is, look, this is the situation. We do have to deal with it. We do have to find practical solutions to problems that did not exist just weeks or months ago. And you just control. I think you put it really well. You work on what you can do. So while all this is going on, financial meltdown, health crisis, it's an election cycle and an election year. And this, if my memory serves, and it's a little foggy, I think you're up for re-election this year, right? Has that even been even on your radar screen?
It has not been on my radar because, I mean, you know, I think of hearing you talk there, I think of two different moments over the last couple of months. One, I was in, and this is when we were still doing in-person press briefings, and I was over in the Emergency Operations Center and got in an elevator with Chief Driscoll, our fire chief who just retired, and we were riding in the elevator, and I said, well, how are you doing, Chief? And he said, Mayor, every day is the same day. The numbers just change. I thought that sums it up so well. Like, there aren't weekends anymore for us. That every day of the week is pretty much the same day over and over and over again. It's just the data changes day by day. And so getting into that kind of routine has been a real challenge. But I'll tell you, I think for me, a low point in all of this, if I were to think, you know, the hardest time, there was a period of time, a couple days in a row, we had our first death, and that was tough because that, you know, again, makes it very real. And then the other one was a couple days after that, you know, our health department was really getting their modeling going, and I had a call with them just to get a feel for, you know, what is this going to look like over the next several months? And they said that, you know, Mayor, if our modeling is accurate and we don't do anything, then we're looking at 20,000 people hospitalized between now and the end of August. And then I did the math in my head and knew that our mortality rates were that at about 1 in 5 people who are hospitalized with this die. And I got off that call and just went out my backyard, and my wife and daughter were out there, and talking with my wife and telling her this, and my daughter's off playing with the dog, and it really all kind of hit me at that moment. Like, here's my kid who won't see her classmates for, you know, all of a sudden school's just over for the year. Won't see him again until best case scenario in August. Won't see any of her friends or cousins. She's here and she gets to play with the dog by herself in the yard, and that's it. And to think that she has to, as a kid, live through a world where we could have 4,000 people in our community die in the next couple of months, I thought, I can't believe that my daughter has to, and my son as well, who was inside playing video games with his friends, but I couldn't believe that they have to grow up in that environment. And that was really hard. But again, I kind of came back to that. That's the situation. There's nothing we can do. What we can control, though, and those numbers were based on if we did nothing, what we could control is how we responded and what kinds of systems we put in place to protect people from one another and from spreading this virus. And that's what gave me complete confidence and no hesitation in putting the orders in place that we did. And the good news is that radically changed the projections from the health department by putting those orders in place to where, you know, based on their projections, we saved the lives of thousands of people by following those practices. And that's not just, you know, me putting that in place. That's everybody who complied with it. You know, American, we're not in China where the mayor has, you know, an army at their disposal.
Right. Step on your porch, we shoot you. Right. You can't do that here.
It requires consensus building. And the fact that we put those orders in place and people across town were like, we get it. Let's do it. This community saved thousands of people by doing that. So that's a, for me, that is a high point, is to see the concern that Tulsans have for their neighbors and their willingness to sacrifice to save their lives.
Everything I hear from every epidemiologist, virologist, basically everybody with any kind of scientific alphabetic, you know, letters after their name, is saying we got to test. We got to test the entire population. And we are just not testing because we just don't have the test. This situation with the CDC just was bungled from day one. There's no way to put a pretty picture on it. They screwed up the testing. They sent out tests that were flawed. I mean, I go on and on. You know the situation better than I do. We're at, what, maybe 75,000 people tested in the state at this point? How concerned are you that we really don't have any solid numbers on morbidity, on spread of the disease, on how many people have actually recovered? I mean, does that trouble you?
Well, I think first, as a realist, I recognize that at the outset of this, we're dealing with a brand new virus. And so I know that there's been a lot of inclination by some to want to blame people for being caught by surprise. But the reality is this is a brand new virus that spread very rapidly. And so no one had all the testing that they needed in place to address it. I will say that's one of the things that made our decision making in the early going so hard, was that we did not know how widespread the virus was in our community. And in the early weeks of this event in Tulsa, I would say one of the most challenging aspects of the response was that we had people who had symptoms who could not get a test. People who had symptoms for days and couldn't get a test, or they would finally get a test and they'd have to wait a week or two to get a response. And at that point, the test is virtually useless. And so that was, I think, a great challenge. And I'm thankful that we're in a place now where anybody in our community who has a single symptom has multiple places that they can go to at no cost to them to get a test. And I really thank the Tulsa Health Department for their extraordinary work in getting that set up and in place for everybody who needs it. But you're right. I mean, as part of a reopening, if you will, the key strategies to protect health in the midst of that reopening are having plentiful testing that you can get quick results on, and then have contact tracing so that you're able to identify people that may have come into contact with a positive person and let them know that they need to quarantine immediately. And I'll also say that that's something that we've found has worked very effectively for our workforce at the City of Tulsa. You know, we've got 4,000 city employees, about three quarters of which are in very outward facing public jobs. They don't have the ability to work from home. They're out in the field responding to 911 calls, you know, chasing down criminals, responding to health calls or putting out fires, or fixing water lines and sewer lines and fixing streets. I mean, they're out there in the public. Out of 4,000 employees, we've had three test positive for COVID so far. And I largely attribute that to two things. One, security, safety precautions that our departments have put in place to protect the employees as they're doing their jobs. But two, that we've had a very good relationship with the Tulsa Health Department. So as soon as somebody tested positive, the health department's contact tracing team let our management team know immediately, and we immediately quarantined any other city employees that may have come in contact with that person. And so it really minimized any opportunity for the virus to spread amongst our workforce. That's in a microcosm right there, what we need to be doing across our entire community moving forward. And so that's one conversation I'm continuing to have with the health department is, you know, do they have the resources they need to do contact tracing well enough? And then how can we continue to ramp up our testing regime? And I know that's a priority for the governor because I hear him talk about it all the time, but that's something that we can never be satisfied on. And I don't think, at least at this stage, we have to continue to ramp that up so that we can get those tests done broadly and get those results quickly.
All right, one more quick item. And moving forward, Oklahoma is probably going to take a really hard look at how it funds city operations. I would imagine that you would be leading the charge to somehow change the system that forces cities in Oklahoma to rely solely on sales taxes for city operations, like police and fire and 911 dispatchers. I believe we are the only state in the union that has that requirement. And do you think that the time has finally come for Oklahoma to change that?
Well, you're right. We are the only state in the country that requires that. And when I tell my colleagues in other cities that we can't use property tax for operations and that we're forced into reliance on sales tax, their jaws drop because they cannot believe that a government which is responsible for providing public safety would be forced into reliance on something so volatile as sales tax. And yet that's been the norm in Oklahoma for decades. And so throughout my time as mayor, we've been pushing a bill through the legislature to change that in partnership with City of Oklahoma City and a lot of other cities around the state. It's been stopped and blocked the last two sessions, but this session it has passed the House and it is before the Senate, and we are trying very hard to get it passed by the Senate before they adjourn. And what that would allow us to do is to bring up a local vote to use a portion of property tax to fund public safety. Doesn't have to be everything we do at the City of Tulsa. Let's focus on those things that are the most crucial, fundamental things that we do, and make sure that we're not in a position, which I've seen us be put in this position during my time at the city when I was on the city council, where our economy went in decline during the Great Recession. We had to cut back on police staffing. Well, what happens when your economy is in decline? Crime goes up. It's the worst time to be cutting back on police staffing. And yet that's the position that cities in Oklahoma have been put in over and over and over again for decades. And so we're trying to get that changed through a law that, again, is before the state Senate right now. And we're very hopeful that they would bring it up for vote. We believe it will pass if it's given a chance to be voted upon. And then we could put the decision in the hands of voters at a local level in cities across the state as to whether or not they want to give that more secure and consistent funding source in property tax and use that to fund part of their public safety operations.
And flexibility, I would think, for how a city could respond when it's facing, again, health crisis piled on top of an economic crisis, piled on top of an election year, piled on top. It gives a city, makes it a little more nimble to be able to move some money around or do some creative work that doesn't involve, bankrupting the town.
Yeah, no, it allows for greater diversification. You think about like somebody who's planning for retirement. If you told them, you can only put all your money in one stock, that would be a very reckless way to plan for retirement. The idea there is that you want to own a diversity of stocks and bonds as well, so that if something goes wrong in one area, you have the other things through your diversification to protect you. And yet again, here in Oklahoma, cities have not been allowed that opportunity to diversify. We're trying to get that changed. And I want to say I'm very thankful. Governor Stitt has been firm on board about changing this. Senator Lankford just came out yesterday and said publicly that he thinks that it needs to change. So there's a growing base of support around the state that recognizes this is something that needs to change.
Tulsa Mayor G.T. Bynum, special thanks to KRMG's Russell Mills for the interview. This is Oklahoma Perspective. For Cox Media Group, I'm Bert Williams.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.